It looks like President-elect Biden has a Secretary of State.
Yeah, it's reportedly Antony Blinken, a former State Department official and Biden's closest foreign policy advisor. What does this mean for America and the world?
I'm Steve Inskeep with David Green, and this is Up First from NPR News. More key Republicans want the departing president to stop trying to overturn his election defeat.
We cannot continue to act as if something happened here that didn't happen.
With pressure growing, how much longer can the president stall?
And the U.S. now has over 12 million coronavirus cases. Public health officials are worried about the holidays.
Thanksgiving could become the Super Bowl of super spreading events.
Will Americans just stay home? Stay with us. We have the news you need to start your day.
This message comes from NPR sponsor 3M, working to improve lives through innovation and action. Learn how 3M is helping the world respond to COVID-19 at 3M.com/COVID. 3M science applied to life.
Support also comes from Blue Air, award-winning air purifiers designed in Sweden. Their most advanced model, Health Protect, is the only air purifier with germ shield technology that monitors your room and turns on when needed. More at blueair.com/NPR.
All right, Joe Biden is starting to put together his cabinet.
Multiple news organizations say the president-elect has chosen an experienced former State Department official to be his Secretary of State. Tony Blinken held the number two State Department post in the Obama administration. He favors strong international alliances. It is thought that Blinken would be easier to confirm than some other possible nominees. The Senate approved his previous diplomatic job by a vote of 55-38.
And we have NPR's Michelle Kellerman here. She covers the State Department and joins us to talk about this move. Good morning, Michelle.
Good morning.
So what should we know about Tony Blinken?
Well, he's a 58-year-old former deputy secretary of state, but most of all, he's someone who spent a lot of time with Joe Biden over the years, both in the White House and in Congress. You know, I remember going to briefings with Biden when he was chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, and Blinken was always there. He traveled with Biden. He was a close advisor back then. So if he is confirmed as the next Secretary of State, his counterparts abroad will know that he has a very long history with the president-elect. He's a safe pick, he's polished, and he knows the State Department well.
Well, what do you think this pick tells us? I mean, beyond this being someone who knows Biden well and that they have that long relationship, what does it tell us about the president-elect's goals when it comes to foreign policy?
I think it signals kind of a more traditional approach to foreign policy and diplomacy, also maybe human rights. You know, on Twitter, he raised concerns recently about a conflict in Ethiopia. And last week, he put out a much tougher statement than the State Department did about Egypt arresting high-profile human rights activists. Blinken also talks a lot about restoring U.S. leadership, especially when it comes to the coronavirus pandemic. Here he is earlier this year at the Meridian International Center talking about how a Biden administration would, for instance, restore funding to the World Health Organization.
A Biden administration would do the opposite of what the Trump administration has done in terms of pulling back from our leadership in international organizations, institutions, alliances.
He talks about how the U.S. needs partners to deal with China, which he calls a competitor. And on Iran, he said it was a mistake for the Trump administration to leave the nuclear deal. A Biden administration would rejoin if Iran gets back into compliance. Those are just a few of the things that he's talked about.
And it sounds like it's not just Blinken. I mean, we're getting a fuller picture of President-elect Biden's foreign policy team.
Right. I mean, Jake Sullivan is a top candidate to be U.S. National Security Advisor. He actually played a key role in opening up a back channel to Iran that led to the negotiations on that Iran nuclear deal. More recently, he's been involved in this project to get a better sense of how U.S. foreign policy can help middle-class Americans. Another name that we're hearing, not a household name, but a very familiar one to the State Department, is Linda Thomas-Greenfield. Several news organizations say she'll be tapped to be the ambassador to the United Nations. And that, David, would really be a signal to career Foreign Service officers who have been sidelined by the Trump administration. Thomas Greenfield, who's Black, was in the Foreign Service for 35 years, and she was one of many who was kind of forced out by the Trump administration.
NPR diplomatic correspondent Michelle Kellerman. Michelle, thanks as always.
Thank you.
All right, so as the incoming president makes personnel moves, the departing president does as well.
His constantly changing legal team distanced itself from a conspiracy theorist. Sidney Powell started a press conference last week spinning out wild theories about George Soros and Hugo Chavez. The departing president's personal lawyer, Rudy Giuliani, introduced Sidney Powell, but after the embarrassing reaction, Giuliani now says in a statement, she's not part of the Trump team. Giuliani apparently still is part of the Trump team and suffered absolute defeat in court over the weekend in Pennsylvania. The president has lost virtually all court challenges, and a few more key Republicans have now abandoned the departing president as he tries to overturn a Democratic election.
And we have NPR's Franco Ordonez here with us. He covers the White House. Franco, good morning.
Good morning.
So Pennsylvania, the state that put Biden over the top to win the election, Steve mentioned another legal defeat there for President Trump over the weekend. Bring us up to speed.
Yeah, President Trump's campaign had sought to block the certification of Pennsylvania's election results. You know, they alleged that Republicans had been disadvantaged, illegally that is, because some counties allowed voters to fix errors on their mail-in ballots. But a federal judge dismissed that case, saying it would disenfranchise millions of voters. And the judge wrote this really scathing decision, saying the plaintiff, Trump's team that is, came without factual proof. Trump's campaign says it will appeal, but the deadline for Pennsylvania to certify is today. And just to note, Biden won there by more than 80,000 votes.
Well, despite that fact, I mean, a lot of Republicans are remaining quiet and not calling on President Trump to admit the obvious that he lost. But you did have Republican Senator Pat Toomey from Pennsylvania after this decision now coming out and calling for the president to concede.
Yeah, he released a statement soon after the ruling saying President Trump has exhausted all plausible legal options to challenge the result in Pennsylvania. He went on to congratulate President-elect Biden and Vice President-elect Kamala Harris and said that Trump should move forward with the transition process in order to protect his legacy. Toomey is a Republican. He is retiring in 2 years, but he's joining a small number of Republican senators who said Trump needs to concede. Trump was also criticized by Chris Christie, an ally of his. Here he is on ABC yesterday.
I've been a supporter of the president's. I voted for him twice. But elections have consequences. And we cannot continue to act as if something happened here that didn't happen.
Still, most Republicans are trying to thread that needle, saying Biden should go ahead and in many cases get transition resources. But also Trump should be able to pursue all legal avenues.
I mean, but you just listen to Toomey, though, saying that the president has exhausted all plausible legal options. You have Christie there saying you can't continue to act as if something here happened that didn't happen. Beyond lying and saying that fraud exists that doesn't, what are the president's options here to go forward? The window's basically closing, right?
Yeah, time is running out. In Georgia, results have already been certified by the Republican state leadership. But on Saturday night, Trump's campaign said it's requesting a recount. This would be the third time those 5 million ballots will be counted. I mentioned the certification deadline in Pennsylvania. That's today. And Michigan's canvassing board also meets today when the election results are expected to be certified. Biden won Michigan by 150,000 votes. Trump's campaign has sought to overturn those results as well. And we'll remember, Trump invited those Michigan Republicans to the White House in a pressure offensive.
NPR's Franco Ordonez. Franco, thank you so much.
Thank you.
I mean, this is just startling. The United States recorded 1 million new coronavirus cases in just a matter of 6 days.
This country has now seen more than 12 million documented COVID infections. And as cases keep surging, public health experts are urging Americans to stay home this Thanksgiving holiday. Some relief could be around the corner with newly approved treatments, maybe even vaccines, which have looked very good in tests, but it will be many months before all Americans can be vaccinated.
And in Paris, Allison Arbery joins us this morning. Hi, Allison.
Good morning, David.
I mean, this surge is just getting scarier by the day. What is the latest?
Yeah. As we head into this holiday week, it's a very grim picture, David. We're averaging 170,000 new cases a day, a 60% increase compared to just 2 weeks ago. Deaths are averaging about 1,200 per day and rising. That's nearly a person dying from COVID every minute in the U.S. I spoke to former CDC Director Tom Frieden about this surge.
It's shocking. We're losing
the equivalent of a 9/11 attack every 3 days in the U.S. And what frankly scares me is that Thanksgiving could become the Super Bowl of super spreading events.
You know, it just doesn't take much, David. All you need is one asymptomatic person in your gathering to start a round of infections. The CDC now says most coronavirus cases are in fact spread by people without symptoms.
Well, and the CDC is just bluntly saying, don't travel this holiday season. Do you think people are listening?
You know, I bet people are rethinking their plans, especially travel, but a survey out from the University of Michigan this morning finds that 1 in 3 people polled say the benefits of gathering with family for the holidays are worth the risk of spreading or getting the virus. I should point out the survey was completed before the CDC advisory, but you know, it just shows the temptation to gather, David. People want to see family. I certainly would like to too, but as Tom Frieden says, better to have a Zoom Thanksgiving than an ICU Christmas.
Yeah, I mean, a Zoom Thanksgiving is different, but at least for this year, it might be what we have to do. Obviously, let me ask you, Allison. I mean, you have a president-elect who, during a campaign, said that tackling this pandemic is just a top priority. What do we know about how prepared Joe Biden and Kamala Harris are to take action when they come into office?
You know, they say they're going to be ready on day one, but the health experts advising the Biden-Harris team say they need access to the queer scientists, to their data, to help this new administration transition smoothly, especially when it comes to all the real-time data on the pandemic and vaccine distribution planning. It's a monumental task, David, with very complicated logistics. I spoke to ER physician Rob Rodriguez of UC San Francisco. He is one of Biden's advisors.
The current administration needs to step up. They really need to think about the health of the American people and start granting us full access.
The president-elect himself has been saying lives are at risk, and Dr. Rodriguez says that one of the biggest challenges when it comes to a vaccine is the hesitancy among people. With more promising vaccine news, including new information out on the effectiveness of another vaccine, the AstraZeneca vaccine, this is all top of mind. So the Biden team is definitely thinking ahead to a vaccine education strategy. It's a big job to answer people's questions, make them feel comfortable getting it, on top of the logistics of actually distributing it.
Monumental task, as you say. NPR's Allison Aubrey. Allison, thank you so much.
Thank you, David.
And that is Up First for Monday, November 23rd. I'm David Greene.
And I'm Steve Inskeep. Join us here tomorrow. Subscribe to us wherever you listen to podcasts and rate us and review us on Apple Podcasts.
And if you want more in-depth coverage of the stories we talked about today and a whole lot more, listen to NPR's Morning Edition. That is the radio show that Steve and I host along with Rachel Martin and Noel King. You can find Morning Edition and find your NPR station by visiting stations.npr.org.
Since the 1980s, hip-hop and America's prisons have grown side by side.
And we're going to investigate this connection to see how it lifts us up and holds us down.
Hip-hop is talking about what we live, trying to live the American dream, failing at the American dream.
I'm Sydney Madden.
I'm Rodney Carmichael. Listen now to the Louder Than a Riot podcast from NPR Music,
where we trace the collision of rhyme and punishment in America.